Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the 18. That makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Waiting the mic.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock joined by Waiting, coming off the 96th Annual Academy Awards.
That's what we're reviewing tonight?
You know, I watched the whole Academy Awards on Sunday night. First time I've maybe ever done that. Never watch it live. You start 2.5 hours in, and then you just go at your own pace. And you can watch that thing in 2 hours. Great, entertaining show. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
The same strategy you use for Monday Night Raw.
I didn't have to take notes. It was wonderful. Wow. Well, welcome everybody to the program. Thank you for tuning in live. We have a lot to get to. It was a busy day, as some may be aware, some maybe not aware, but it's a special edition of Rewind to Raw when we bring in a guest to join us right off the top. He is the man behind WrestleNomics, your friend and mine, Brandon Thurston, who is with us. It is hoodie edition of Brandon Thurston, not available at chop-tees.com, but maybe a future edition there. It is in the WrestleNomics colors, by the way, I will note.
It is, yes. It's blue and white, yes. Sure, close enough.
So, Brandon, if I were to say, what have you and I been off and on working on for weeks, what would you describe that as that came to fruition today? This has been quite a massive undertaking, and I would not have been able to come on tonight and just talk about this solo without having you to be here with us.
Well, I was looking back at when we started to try to report, which we did report today, along with Tim Marchman for Front Office Sports, the identities of the four until now anonymized WWE corporate officers who we can say now are: number one is Nick Khan, number two is Brad Blum, number three is Stephanie McMahon, and number four is Brian Nurse. A couple of those names are probably not that familiar to wrestling fans, but we've been working on that. When I sent the first email trying to dig into this was back about 3 weeks ago, but it's been much more intense in the last 7 days or so before John.
Yes. Yeah. This has been something that we have been kind of working on. And yeah, in the last week, this grew significantly in intensity, and giving us the chance to work with Tim Marchman, who just quite frankly, I don't think we could have finished this without Tim Marchman, who is people have heard him on our shows, many other shows. He's a fantastic reporter, and just getting to work with him was just a real just education at the very least. So this news has come out, and now we do have the identities of the four corporate officers. And with that knowledge, we also did get a response from WWE on the record, as well as Ann Callis, who is the attorney for Janelle Grant, who did confirm the identities of the four corporate officers. I would certainly encourage those that are reading the story to also go through the complaint yourself of what the corporate officers number one through number four, what is listed in there. Like, we're not bringing to light any new allegations beyond the complaint. What we are doing is uncovering four of the anonymized corporate officers and what is alleged in the complaint of what they knew, did not know, which ultimately is going to play out if this civil case does end up going to a trial.
Yeah, and I think it's really meaningful, as I was telling John and Tim earlier today offline, is that we've got a really substantial comment response from WWE for, in my view, really the first time after we've had, you know, ever since this lawsuit came out on January 25th, we've had a press conference with Paul Levesque, and he didn't really want to talk about this. He wanted to focus on the positive. And there's been, we've had Shawn Michaels really actually handle the questions better than Paul did in an NXT conference call. And there've been a number of questions asked to talent. WWE not really making any comment. Now, TKO had made one comment when the story first came out and sort of distanced itself from Vince. But WWE itself, and certainly the number one executive in WWE, Nick Khan, has not said anything about this. And Nick Khan, to be clear, Nick Khan has not made a comment himself, but WWE spokesperson has made a number of comments for this article.
Yeah, one of which is WWE takes Ms. Grant's allegations very seriously and has no tolerance for any physical abuse or unwanted physical contact. Neither Nick Khan nor Brad Blum, prior to the lawsuit being filed on January 25th, 2024, were aware of any allegation by Ms. Grant that she was the victim of abuse or unwanted physical conduct, nor does the complaint allege that either had knowledge of such. And yes. I mean, if you read the complaint and you can see like what is alleged of, you know, the degrees of what knowledge, like we know at the baseline here, this was a inappropriate relationship that Vince McMahon was engaged in. And should this civil case move forward, the degree to which this was known, what elements were known, there is still a case that it's very tricky to report on these when you still have this case that is ongoing and that we are in the midst of. And that's something we've also had to navigate in our reporting.
And one thing we can make extra clear for people is, as John said a few minutes ago, we've revealed the identities of who these otherwise anonymized officers are. So we know who they are now. We have no new allegations. All we have now is you can reread the complaint and you can know who Janelle Grant is referring to throughout this complaint. Now, we don't know that Brad Blum, Nick Khan, or Stephanie McMahon, or Brian Nurse, for that matter, knew of all the terrible various allegations that Janelle Grant is making. We don't necessarily know that they knew anything about these terrible assaults that were allegedly happening to her. But it is hard to believe for me, this is my opinion, that they didn't know that there at least was some sort of relationship, probably a sexual relationship between Vince McMahon, who was the CEO of a company that had more than 800 employees at the time, and a low-level entry employee who was, you know, several rungs up the ladder from her. So that should have set some alarm bells off of this is a relationship where there's an enormous disparity in power, and we can get into whether or not WWE had some explicit policy that prohibited such things or not. But you could say that they should have set some alarm bells off for them.
Wait, you've had a chance to read the article. Are there any takeaways that you had from reading it, or any questions for that matter?
I guess a question for you two, just, you know, simply a few hours maybe after the publishing of this article, what are some perhaps misconceptions to interpretations of the story you two might have seen that you might want to clarify?
Mainly the one that I just tried to dispel just a moment ago.
Right. Care to reiterate that just, you know, one more time for the people in the back?
In this article, we have, you know, the headline, and then there's a bullet point. And the first bullet point is neither Khan nor Blum is alleged to have participated in or known about abuse of any kind. Now, again, they didn't, as far as we know, and it's not alleged in this complaint, they did not participate in any sort of assaults or what have you. What they are alleged to have done, according to Janelle Grant, is have supported this relationship between Vince and Janelle Grant.
Right.
The idea that they're should there have been guardrails in place that could have prevented any issues from happening when this relationship that at its core was an improper one, given the power imbalance, and that this relationship should not have been tolerated. Again, that's for it to play out and make those determining factors and how much knowledge. And again, it will be the people named, the people that are the defendants will get their day for their defense. And that is why I can tell everybody this. We were as aggressive as possible to get everyone's side of the story represented here, and leaving no stone unturned when it came to seeking out the ability to hear that side and have it represented as best we could in the finished piece. And I think Brandon would agree with that.
Yeah. And just to put it another way, did Blum and Nikon know that Janelle Grant was being sexually assaulted, as she alleges? Not necessarily. Did they support Vince having this relationship with her and getting her moved around to various departments? According to Grant, she did. They did.
Yeah. So I would certainly advise people that if you're just reading the article, cross-reference it with the complaint. It's very accessible, and this does fill in the gaps of number one through number four. And you can see in plain language in the complaint of what is brought up and what is alleged and what is not alleged.
Yeah. And I guess when it comes to the other two, so the main story here is that we've got today the number one officer in all of WWE is alleged by Grant to be very involved in supporting the relationship between Vince and Grant. You've got Brad Blum, who was chief of staff, who's EVP of operations, depending on the time, that's his title. He's very involved, allegedly, in supporting this relationship between Grant and Vince. Then we do have Stephanie McMahon, who's corporate officer number three, who's only mentioned in two paragraphs, where number three is described as inviting Grant to sit next to her at a meeting. And Grant alleges that she had knowledge of other inappropriate relationships that Vince had. So there's a limited scope of what's alleged here when it comes to Stephanie McMahon. When it comes to Brian Nurse, that's an even more complicated thing in terms of it appears that, even according to Grant's own depiction of the situation, that he was very uncomfortable. He was very cold to her. They didn't have a good relationship, apparently, according to her. And he eventually left the company under what circumstances aren't clear.
Right.
And what explain why it was Nick Khan and Brad Blum that might be the two that are in the headline and not the other corporate officers?
Because there's the most substance when it comes to Khan and Blum. They were, according to Grant, supportive of keeping this relationship going and keeping her in these departments and helping Vince out in managing the situation as it concerns Janelle Grant. Whereas there's very limited information about Stephanie. There's a conflicting disposition when it comes to number four, who is Brian Nurse.
Hmm. I know a name a lot of people, at least, that might be in the WWE audience, pro wrestling audience, that might have, wanted more clarification on is the role of Apollo Vec in all of this. Maybe even a name a lot of people might have speculated would be one of the officers. In your research, do you feel like you could say any sort of conclusive, statement about what you consider his role to be in all of this?
We can say nothing beyond what Janelle Grant is alleging, and which, again, is all we're saying here. These are the people that she is referring to in this complaint. Does Paul Levesque know? Did Paul Levesque know about this relationship between Vince and Janelle Grant? Did he know about any of the other allegedly inappropriate relationships that Vince may have had over the years? We can't say any more today than we could yesterday.
And also, just on a note on the fourth, for those that are not familiar, obviously everyone knows Nick Khan, the current president of WWE. Brad Blum is still there in the company, yes, as chief operating officer. Stephanie McMahon, we know, has departed. And Brian Nurse left the company in November of 2020, which we sought clarification on him leaving, whether it was a resignation, whether he was released, and did not get confirmation on the nature of his exit. But he was somebody that there was a press release when he was brought into the company. He was general counsel and then left in 2020. So two with the company, two that have since left.
Everyone was reached out to here. We overnighted a letter to Stephanie McMahon, but we have not heard back.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm going to leave maybe for you two to discuss a lot more of the particulars on Wednesday, because I know there's probably way more that went into all this than you guys were able to just tell us in these 10 minutes. So,
yeah. I have one question for Wei, though. In all this time, I've been wondering, what did Wei know and when did he know it? Did you know that we were working on this all this time?
I knew you were working on it. Yeah. John felt like it was more of a, I guess, you know, responsibility as my business partner to kind of let me in on it rather than just kind of drop it all on.
Was this an overwhelming burden on post wrestling? Do we you know, create extra work for people?
No, not at all. Like I couldn't be more proud of the two of you. I mean, that is one of the questions that I'm sure you two will discuss. Why the decision to publish through Fun Office Sports rather than your own, you know, outlets? And I look forward to, you know, you guys maybe taking us through some of that process on Wednesday.
Yeah, yes. We will, like, because that definitely was a part of the whole thought process. So Tim Marchman is going to join us on Wednesday at the beginning of the show at 3 p.m. Eastern time. So we'll talk about any developments, if there's any reactions to this story, and we'll talk about what we can. Like, a lot of it is just it's in the article itself. But, you know, we will talk about where we can and definitely address that subject as well. Why working with Front Office Sports as well. But yeah, I will just publicly state that Brandon is just as talented a reporter as I have ever worked with. I mean, this was something that he was just relentless in terms of pursuing. And like, I learned a lot just working with him in this like small period. I'm very lucky to work with people like both of you. But this was certainly just another level of, you know, type of story to tackle. And I was very happy with what we were able to put out today.
Yeah, like I've told John and I've told Tim privately, there's no two people I would rather have done this with. And, you know, I really trust John's judgment. And Tim was just, I told him I want him to defend me in every fight we get in from now on. But yes, I think there's a lot of interesting media stuff we may be able to talk about on Wednesday. The information that we know and that we can say publicly is in the article, but this is a very interesting experience that we had from a media perspective that maybe we'll get into more.
All right. So go and support patreon.com/WrestleNomics. If you enjoy this type of work, this is the kind of stuff that you are supporting as well. And we're back Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern time with Brandon. And with that, you can now finally go to sleep on what has been a very long day. Thank you, Brandon.
I'll finish listening to this program and then I'll go to sleep.
Okay. Well, good answer. We won't spoil the winner of the gauntlet yet.
Thank you, Brandon.
That was Brandon Thurston joining us. And again, he will be on Wednesday with Tim Marchman and myself.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
So, Wei, let's go into the rest of the news, unless there's anything else you wanted to tie up on that front.
I mean, I think on behalf of much of the audience, I want to continue to commend you and Brandon on the tremendous, and Tim on the tremendous effort you continue to put into this story, to a level beyond even my expectations of you guys. So yeah, this is some of the best work I've seen any of you guys do.
Well, thank you. Unfortunate news to report over the weekend. That was the passing of Yutaka Yoshie, who was involved in a match for All Japan Pro Wrestling on Sunday. in Gunma in Takasaki and passed away following the match he had. And they put out an announcement that he returned to the locker room. His condition suddenly deteriorated and was rushed to hospital in Takasaki City, but he never returned home. And All Japan noting, we would like to remember Yutaka Yoshie's achievements during his lifetime and pray for his soul to rest in peace. Yoshie had come up through the New Japan Dojo, debuting in 1994, went to Europe on excursion several years later, and then kind of his first half of his career was attached to New Japan. He formed a team with Hiroshi Tanahashi. They won the tag titles in 03 together, beating Tenzan and Chono, and then dropping the belts to Tenzan and Osamu Nishimura. Then he went freelance for a number of years, working with Zero One, with Tradition, Noah, and All Japan Pro Wrestling, which I guess is the company most would have affiliated him with during the back number of years. But in New Japan, in Zero One, he formed a team with Steve Corino. In All Japan, he briefly held the tag titles with Aki Bono, but had reduced his schedule over the last number of years. He had only wrestled 7 times last year, and this was actually his first match of the year. Only 50 years of age, so we will await a cause of death if there had been any lingering issue, because yeah, it was just a very sad note, and coming, you know, just shortly after wrestling a match. But somebody that, you know, just a name throughout that 2000s period in New Japan, and I mean throughout the last like 20-30 years.
Not somebody whose career I followed in particular, but I mean 50 years of age is way too young for anybody. I guess we await to see if there's any official cause of death.
Now, I mentioned the Oscars, and there was quite the pro wrestling theme to this show. Not only did Dwayne Johnson present alongside Bad Bunny, but the man that got the lion's share of the attention was John Cena, who was presenting Best Costume Design and did this skit with Jimmy Kimmel where he was going to come out as a streaker and then got cold feet and then waddled his way to the front to present the award. And then you had all of Twitter consumed with one question: was John Cena really naked? And boy, the internet detectives, that there were photos from every single angle. It was like a little odd. Just the obsession here to find out this man's state of dress. But I will say, like, of the talk coming out of it, like outside of Ryan Gosling's performance, I think this is getting like among the most talk coming out of this. And I guess it'll just be like, this was very much a branding exercise by John Cena, who I think has tried to establish himself in sort of this, you know, here's this 46-year-old that is doing, you know, somewhat R-rated comedy now. And this certainly leans into that image that he is aiming for in his film career.
It's what he's good at. It's a space that I think he feels he can occupy that's not completely being taken by Dwayne Johnson, you know, who seems to be more, I guess, into, I don't know, predictable action movies at this point, and Dave Bautista, who seems to be a lot more on the serious acting side of things. John Cena is good at comedy. He's good at doing this, you know, and this is arguably maybe, I don't know, the biggest stage you could showcase this side of him in front of a room full of his peers. Not to mention just a room full of respected peers, right? You know, I would say for his brand of comedy, of whatever he seems to offer Hollywood, I think this was a massive, massive win for him.
I think he got a ton of positive promotion out of this. I would have loved to have been seated next to Martin Scorsese during this.
Would you cast him in your next 5-hour movie?
You know what? Maybe he's going to take a break from the lengthier movie. I was a big fan of Killers of the Flower Moon, but the Academy was not. They were what, 0-for-8
in awards? So one of the jokes last night from Kimmel was that Hollywood, all your movies are too long. The average movie length of at least like the, I think the Best Picture nominees
went up 30 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was something like 2 hours and 20 minutes, and that's almost outrageous. But this is also coming from somebody who's about to review a 3-hour wrestling show.
Yeah, I mean, we really can't talk when it comes to you know, concise movie lengths. But yeah, the film did not win, but Oppenheimer had a big night. Did you catch any of the Oscars or not really?
I did, actually. I caught the big awards. I caught like the big opening monologue and the I'm Just Ken. So the highlights, I would say.
Yeah, the Ryan Gosling was probably the highlight of the show. And Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito doing the Batman bit with Michael Keaton. I howled. I thought that was just great.
I really liked how they had all the several prior winners come up to announce the nominees of like the best actor, best supporting actor categories. It was
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It gave everybody like a specific highlight, even if you're just nominated. And it gave it time to just like, you know, almost like reminisce and see what prior winners look like.
I was a little worried when the first award was best supporting actress and they brought the five out. And I was like, are they doing this for every award? Because this is going to be way too long.
here are all the best sound designers of the past 50 years. Yeah. No, only if you're famous and would they do that.
All right. Next up, latest inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame. So they're adding to the list, and Muhammad Ali has been added. Of course, Muhammad Ali passed away in June of 2016. Kind of surprising, to be quite honest, that this was one that they did not put in while he was still alive and probably would have attended the ceremony and garnered a lot of attention for it. But they never put Muhammad Ali into the Hall of Fame. So he is their, I guess, the celebrity inductee this year. And do you have any kind of thought? Just this is the first Paul Levesque year and who he has chosen so far with Paul Heyman, the U.S. Express, and who's the other one?
Bull Nakano.
Bull Nakano, yes.
So instead of just simply being, you know, the first Paul Levesque year, it's also the first TKO year, right? And that's probably something we have to consider as well. You know, what sort of influence does, I don't know, Ari Emanuel, the current board at TKO, have influence over this year's inductees?
I doubt he's watched the Ali Inoki fight. I doubt it.
Well, he would have known. He would have watched the Will Smith movie, at least, I think, Ari Emanuel. Very good chance of that. These are interesting questions. Otherwise, it doesn't feel like that off from maybe a typical, you know, Hall of Fame year thus far, I would say.
Yeah. I'm curious how many more are part of the class. I could see maybe one more. They haven't done a Warrior Award yet. I can't. Is there any chance they drop the Warrior Award after with this regime?
That's
change?
A very good question. Yeah, very good question. Obviously, I think one of the speculated names would be a Bray Wyatt, you know, coming off of the Mike Rotunda nomination. Mm-hmm. So yeah. We'll see, you know, how they might posthumously. Maybe celebrate him. So I could see a few more names actually at this point.
Announced officially on Collision Saturday night, which was taped several nights earlier in Duluth, Georgia. It is official. Bryan Danielson, Will Ospreay on April 21st in St. Louis. I will imagine that Samoa Joe's match that I'm guessing is going to be Swerve on that show is the main event, but I can make a really strong argument that this should be positioned as the main event. Because I'm very curious to see how much this can drive this pay-per-view on April 21st. And if they can get a spike, I would look at whatever is on this card, that this is a very special one-time only match that they will be able to present. I don't know if you'll be able to run this one back. Maybe, but it could be a long time.
Well, it's never a bad thing when you have that debate about which match should be headlining, you know, when you have more than one viable option, right? I'm thinking because that match is for a championship, and because Joe has already gone through one pay-per-view without headlining a match, that you're going to see Joe versus Swerve before getting that match at Dynasty in the main event. But as a co-headline, I mean, those two matches alone, I think, might be enough to, you know, spark a majority of the interest for this one. And AEW is gonna, like, there's a sort of an embarrassment of riches when it comes to their roster right now, that they might be able to do something like this, give you very worthy double main events 10 to 12 times a year for these.
Like, think about this. You're gonna get, let's assume Joe and Swerve on this show, mm-hmm. Okada and Kingston, very likely Mercedes Moné's first pay-per-view match.
They might do trios with Okada, but yeah, we'll see. Yeah, sure.
I think they're going right to the Continental Crown. I mean, they're doing the trios on Wednesday.
Right. Well, they could have another trios match, but you're right. Like, they could do either. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be a very, very loaded show. Mm-hmm. New Japan Cup update. It is They have one quarterfinal match set after Monday's show, where Jack Perry and Sonata have advanced. They will meet in the third round, and they're closing out the second round throughout this week. On Tuesday's show, they have two tournament matches with Chase Owens against Hirooki Goto, David Finley against Tangaloa. Wednesday in Okayama has Shingo Takagi against Gabe Kidd and Hikuleo against Evil. And then the final set of round two matches go down Friday with Zack Sabre Jr. against Ren Narita, which could be terrific, as will, I'm assuming, Yota Tsuji against El Fantasmo. So I'm finding this New Japan Cup, it's kind of, there's some really strong pairings, and there's also some ones that are just feel very routine for New Japan at the moment. But
a Sonata and Perry rematch from Forbidden Door.
That is right. Yeah. So we will see what happens. That match will be happening this weekend. And I'm guessing Jack Perry could very well win this match. I don't see any value in Sonata beating him at the moment.
Yeah.
And their trajectories and where they're going. I think Jack Perry is the one that they are building, and Sonata does not feel like he is on the upward trajectory. And some ratings notes that we have to talk about. So we got SmackDown on Friday night. They did 2,436,000 viewers. So I'm doing this off the top of my head. 2,439,000 viewers. Oh my gosh. Wow. I was subtly trying to pull up my notes there. I was only off by 3,000 viewers. 2,439,000 viewers, up 4% from last week, 0.69 in the demo. So, you know, this was bigger than last week, and it does seem to be a growing number with the continual appearances of The Rock. Canada did its second largest number of the year, just behind last week, so continues to perform well in Canada. Rampage on Friday, a four-week high at 364,000 viewers and a 0.13, so a big 21% jump in the demo, 30% gain in adults 18 to 34. This featured a three-way tag match with Private Party, Top Flight, and Brian Keith and Commander in the main event. All details can be found at WrestleNomics.com coming out of Friday. And final notes are NXT Tuesday night, following Roadblock last week. Three matches announced as of this recording. Brooks Jensen will challenge Oba Femi for the North American title. Shawn Spears takes on Ridge Holland, and Gigi Dolin against Ariana Grace. Wednesday, it is big business in Boston with the expected arrival of one Mercedes Moné. What is your guessway on where she debuts in the show? Beginning, middle, end.
Oh, interesting. Why don't we split it down the middle? I'm going to say 9 o'clock.
Crossover. Middle. Power. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, filling out the show is Samoa Joe against Wardlow for the AEW title. Jay White against Darby Allin in what Darby is stating could be his last match ever. Riho against Willow Nightingale. Kazuchika Okada and the Jacksons against Death Triangle of Penta, Pac, and Eddie Kingston. And then Chris Jericho and Hook taking on the Gates of Agony. The what could have been the headliner at Supercard of Honor you're getting on Wednesday on free television.
Oh, well, they must have something even better for Supercard.
Must be even bigger. I don't know. They got to get that Supercard of Honor card up and running soon.
You'll find out the card 2 days before the pay-per-view.
They booked the Leocora Center for Supercard of Honor. That's like a 9,000 seat building. I'm assuming they are not going to be setting this up for 9,000, but regardless, it's not like it's some tiny 3,000 seater.
Right. They will probably scale it, but still, I think it'll still do well just because it's there at WrestleMania weekend. You have so many wrestling fans anyway. How it will do. It's another one on Honor Club, is it not?
I think so.
Okay.
I guess we'll find out. Yeah. Do you sense that there will be more interest this year in the Hall of Fame than prior years, or do you think it's around the same?
I think it depends. I think Bray Wyatt would be a big name if he's there. Paul Heyman too. But otherwise maybe about the same. And that's not to say that there's little, like usually there's, I think, a decent amount.
I think there's always a healthy interest. You know, the Supercard of Honor is going to be really loaded up. You've got spring break that night. I mean, there's a few things going on, but I certainly imagine that just of the lineup right now, people will be interested in the Heyman speech at the very least. All news can be found at postwrestling.com on Tuesday night. Braden and Davey are back with Up Next. And then we have Pollock and Thurston Wednesday at 3 Eastern with Tim Marchman joining us. And then we will be live minutes after Big Business And we're going to be doing some big business on Thursday because it's the Ask Away mailbag show where you can get in all of your questions. Go to forum.postwrestling.com. That thread is just screaming for you. Send in your questions by Thursday morning, or if you want your wonderful voice to be heard on the show, memo.fm/postwrestling is where you can send your voice messages. We will play them. We will play them, and we will answer them. All topics welcome.
Speaking of big business, we have some bills to pay.
That is really true because, man, I...
Tell me the truth. Did you remember this week or no?
Remind me, Way.
It is 2024, and tracking technology from advertisers, ISPs, and hackers is getting more sophisticated than many of us can understand. Something you can do to give yourself a bit more peace of mind this year is to protect your browsing by investing in a trusted VPN like NordVPN. Voted best VPN for privacy of 2023 by security.org, Nord is one of the most established and reputable VPN providers in the field. NordVPN is also something I use every day to access geo-blocked online streaming services like AEW+. By far the best way of watching AEW programming commercial-free with on-demand access to AEW's entire TV archive. But perhaps the most value I've gained from using Nord has been the ability to unlock cheaper prices to online content from other parts of the world. And from now until March 20th, when you sign up at nordvpn.com/postwrestling, receive 4 bonus months at discount pricing on all 2-year plans. Plus, users in the US, Canada, UK, and Australia receive an Uber Eats voucher valued from $10 to $30 with their standard, plus, complete, or ultimate plan. Again, that's nordvpn.com/postwrestling. Sign up for as low as $2.91 a month and enjoy some free Uber Eats along with all the benefits of a premium VPN like Nord's.
And what you just missed there was me officially passing the baton to Wei Ting, who will now be in charge of throwing to the Nord ad every single time, because I am.
You had a lot.
I bring no today. Value to, oh. to this this arrangement with.
You had a very busy day. You are excused, but of course, big thank you to our sponsors for keeping the lights on here at Post Wrestling.
Well. Maybe we'll have some candles in lieu of lights on Thursday because the Ask Away Mailbag Show / Wei Ting birthday party on Thursday.
Ooh, speaking of which, we didn't even cover your big weekend. Happy belated birthday, John. 40 years old. How does it feel?
I forgot. I missed it. I was busy. I had a nice low-key birthday. Gets go wild this weekend.
You got to hang out with low-key, huh? Sorry.
But you're turning 40. So I can't do Loki at this hour.
Saturday you're saving up because it's gonna be wild. It's gonna be a wild joint birthday party at the
we're Paul getting Clinton. Together. We're getting together. You, me, and Damian Abraham. I can't wait for it.
He's coming.
He is now. He's gonna feel obligated. He was a little
that type of party.
In fairness, we were texting on Saturday and he was asking me about the details, like when can I come? Can I come at this time? Mentioned, you know, his kids when his wife gets home that he can leave the house. And I'm following this conversation. I'm like, I'm just going to point it out. We are talking about next Saturday, not tonight. It's like, oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. He was about to come on Saturday night. It would have been a very boring party because him and I would have been watching UFC 299.
And I'm sure that would have been fun either way. But yeah, welcome to planning parties in your 40s, you know, where everybody has to coordinate with their wives and children and just their otherwise very mundane lives.
Well, there was nothing mundane about Mundane Night Raw with the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas, sold out. 12,433 tickets at last count by WrestleTix pretty much was going to be full. WWE announcing on the broadcast, 13,907 was the announced figure. And
their seventh consecutive TV.
Seven TVs in a row that they have sold out. So they are on a hot streak. I believe Memphis is sold out for Friday, if not close to it. And then they're in Raleigh next Monday. So we will see if they continue this streak in the lead up. It's we failed to mention in 2 weeks, they have announced now Punk on the Chicago show as well,
mm-hmm. Which they've expanded for.
It's going to be a very, very, very big lead up to Mania and probably a big follow up after Mania too. Like there probably be the last 2 years we have seen a uptick coming out of Mania from the momentum of the show. At the start, we see Travis Scott here in Houston, arriving at the arena and being greeted by Jey Uso and Travis Scott telling him, you know what? You got to work Jimmy at WrestleMania. Jay's like, that's a great idea. I'm going to go out and just call my shot. Why go through a gauntlet to get a Mania spot when I can just take a mic and challenge someone and I get a spot at WrestleMania? Travis Scott should have told Sami Zayn some pointers here. Just go out and challenge someone to a match.
I think it, even in kayfabe, you know, we've come to realize through Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis that there's you have to, when you're talking about WrestleMania, you can't just make a challenge, as we know from the tag team title, the women's tag team division, right? It has to be an attractive match, okay? It has to have marquee value, all right? And if you're facing your twin brother, come on, you can't really beat that. It's not like he's challenging, I don't know, Akira Tozawa.
Bree and Nikki never thought of it. We could nap two Mania paydays.
Maybe AEW.
Possible. Drew McIntyre comes out, and man, maybe the most clever. I mean, it is now, these what chants are coming up on 23 years of existence in WWE this year. And it is the
almost as old as us.
They're getting close.
Yeah.
And Drew McIntyre had this one in his back pocket. Say what if you were happy about what I did to CM Punk? And they were a little conflicted. They're like, damn it, that was good. So then they started chanting CM Punk at Drew McIntyre. I thought Drew, this was another great promo. He's just in the zone now with this character. And you can just see the confidence that he knows this is working. And it's just fueling these performances. He said that he's a champion they can really invest in and be proud of. So he's interrupted by Seth Rollins, who calls Drew a coward. And this is Drew calling him a coward, I believe. Rollins says that Drew reminds him of CM Punk, who he thought was the biggest hypocrite in the world until he met Drew, and knows that Drew would take the same opportunity if the bloodline helped him, if it meant winning the world title, the thing that he has complained about all this time. And mentions how Cody and Seth are going to take on the bloodline on night one, and then night two, I'm going to do what I've always done to you, Drew. I'm going to beat you and get the job done. And Drew says, you have to face me at Mania, and nothing you say is going to provoke me. So Rollins takes his best shot and says, you know, I've got a whole lot going on WrestleMania weekend to worry about, but the thing I have to worry about the least is you, Drew. And he comes back. He's about to attack, but he... 3-2-1, 1-2-3, what the heck is bothering him? And he, Carl Winslow'd his way to the back to end the segment. Very nice promo between both.
Good segment, I thought, from these two. Putting a bit more focus now on Drew versus Seth, now that the WrestleMania matches, the tag team matches out of the way for Seth Rollins. I thought it was a really interesting promo from Drew to start off. You know, he was, I felt, essentially campaigning to be a new corporate champion for
the board.
TKO, the board. Yeah. He is telling Seth Rollins that the board of TKO can now have a champion that they're proud of, that a champion that could be on their side. He's a champion that understands The Rock's role in the bigger picture of the evolution of this business. So I find that to be a potentially interesting direction. Could you see a pair up with Drew McIntyre and The Rock as a new corporate champion of sorts? I also liked how the both of these two were able to point out hypocrisies within each other's like past actions in their prior interaction here. You know, Seth here for telling Drew to forget about the bloodline, then becoming obsessed with the bloodline himself. And Drew, of course, having grievances with the bloodline's interference and now gladly accepting their help. Both of those things are related, but the only difference is their differences in interpretation at this point. So at this point, I feel like they've done a great job of like making these two hate each other using their respective associations with the bloodline, who are this like, you know, sort of overarching entity, especially now with The Rock involved. I think the promos were well written, full of good logic from both of the characters, taking into account their prior histories, and both of them still keeping their matches alive with CM Punk as well by mentioning Punk in their respective promos.
I'm looking forward to the pair up on screen of Drew McIntyre and Steve Coonan. Or maybe Brad Keywell or Jonathan Kraft. I think this is the group that Drew should be forming.
Who are the new Stooges, I guess?
I mean, you have the potential here. I think everyone's looking at Dwayne Johnson, but we have plenty of candidates here on the board that would be more than well. You think Mark Shapiro would shy away from a live mic on Raw every week?
I feel like Mark Shapiro has quite the promo in him.
Comes out, looks at this blank canvas and is disgusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where are the activations?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The Claymore presented by.
Yeah.
So, a lot of post-mania plans that were introduced here. Throughout the night, we got videos of all the members of the Gauntlet match, starting off with Chad Gable reflecting on his loss to Gunther and "You should only wipe tears of joy from your children." And his path to heaven runs through a gauntlet of hell to earn his date with destiny and redemption. Not many people get to rewrite history, but this match, it just means more.
So they did videos. Correct me if I'm wrong. They did videos for almost everybody, but I don't remember seeing the Sami Zayn one. Did they do a Sami Zayn one?
I thought maybe I missed it because I didn't see a video for Zayn. The other five I did.
Yeah. So we can't both have missed it. So anyway, they did videos for everybody. This one, except Sami Zayn, curiously enough, this video was
not
by
the corporate
far
champion, not the corporate pick. They're not putting the dollar. You think they're doing a big shoot like this for Sami Zayn? Like, look at this. This is a on location shoot with Chad Gable.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do find it curious that they might have omitted Zayn. But nonetheless, this was by far the best video of all of them. This video, I felt, was outstanding and made quite the case for Chad Gable actually winning this match and going over to WrestleMania. They took a guy who, I mean, I thought was really just kind of being thrown a bone here by being included among these six, but they elevated him just via this video to the status of somebody who you could actually see facing Gunther on a WrestleMania stage. And I think that's also because of like the how compelling his story actually is. But it took, I think, this sort of video to do a great job of refreshing it for an audience and, you know, visually presenting it. He's doing this to avenge his daughter's heartbroken, you know, tear, you know, inducing shock inflicted by Gunther from all those months ago. I mean, it completely reminded us of just the emotions of that particular match.
It's an okay story, but he's also short.
Well,
and I think that has kind of gone unchecked for a few too many years.
Are we still like, is he still recovering from Shorty G at this stage?
Well, he's, you know, it's going to be that, that cloud over his short stature for some.
I would say like maybe Shorty G could have direct, like I would say like the months and months of Alpha Academy sort of shenanigans coming off of that Gunther match weren't necessarily helpful either. It's not like he was portrayed as any sort of like dominant, you know, contender after that Gunther match.
They did present him very seriously though when he got into the ring and could have those killer matches, but couch it with all the comedy that, I mean, this has been the most effective Chad Gable is having this attachment with his daughter and getting the most out of that loss to Gunther, which we're talking about something that went down in September. And they also did a roll call of several past IC champions throughout these video packages,
including Chris Jericho mentioned or shown.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, they were, you know, Sting, Jericho. Next week, they'll probably be, I don't know where they will be promoting next. Maybe they'll be talking about the
Hook.
Kazuchika Okada didn't sign here. I want to see him. Tune in on Wednesdays. Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan. They had a very good match here. Becky came off the turnbuckle into a codebreaker and then leaps off the middle rope and gets caught in another codebreaker. That's for a two count. Becky tries for a German off the edge of the apron. That one wasn't going through. So she gets hit with a sunset bomb to the floor. They go through a second commercial break and it's Liv getting out of the armbar, applying the Rings of Saturn into a cradle and then a jumping DDT. Oblivion is hit, but Becky rolls to the floor, avoiding the cover. And then Liv leaps off the turnbuckle in the final sequence, being caught with a manhandle slam. Becky gets the win in 15 minutes and 28 seconds, but they worked very hard. And I enjoyed this quite a bit.
I really enjoyed this match too. I mean, when Becky was teasing that German to live off
you
the
thought she was gonna take it.
No, I was laughing. I was like, how cute, you know, like first of all, it's the WWE, like I don't think I've ever seen that spot done in the WWE, so I was like, this is a cute little tease that nobody will buy. And then Becky actually ends up taking a sunset flip powerbomb from the apron to the floor, which surprised me to say the least. I think that alone kind of tells you maybe what lengths Becky was willing to go to make sure that this was a memorable and good match and substantial match. match, I thought it was a big risk for her to take and for the company to take this close to WrestleMania. But she went there and, man, like, it told you how serious she was taking this match. I thought these two were given ample time to create a very compelling match that tried to position Liv as an equal to Becky Lynch. And I thought they were successful in doing that, giving her like two really big near falls. I love the mirror imaging of each hitting their finisher and then the other escaping by rolling to the floor. In terms of pacing and activity, I think what we got to see, at least, you know, outside of the commercials, was very active and constant. And neither of their moves might be the best looking or most technical, but I think they have their timing really well. And most importantly, they have personalities that somehow, for whatever reason, captures like the crowd's attention for every single beat of the match.
Rhea Ripley comes out congratulating Becky. Crowd is chanting for mommy. And then Becky, she says, knows deep down that Rhea is better and is accepting all of these tough matches before WrestleMania, so you have a built-in excuse when you lose, and says, if you aren't 100% at WrestleMania, you won't be the man. You'll just be a disappointment. And Becky says, I had to prove that I was better, and said a few weeks ago when she wasn't sure if she was better than Rhea, she planted a seed of doubt. And now that seed of doubt has grown into a tree with branches and leaves and roots. And when people state that she is when people, I don't even know what I'm reading here. Well, from my
when people
here.
Believe in her, she's good.
That's,
but when they doubt her, she's great.
Yes. Okay. They're much better. Command of the English language is waiting. Don't doubt her. That was the point here. She has, though, unleashed her own self-doubt with that promo from a few weeks ago. But they are making this the story that she has all these mountains to climb before the biggest of all in Rhea Ripley. And this will continue with, she got attacked backstage after this big match with Liv. And then she gets Nia next week that you would. I guess the question is, do you keep this elusive win over Nia as something for post-Mania? Or is this, you know, the typical Mania booking that you conquer all your outstanding challenges before the big match?
I think since we've already had the DQ, you know, like the no contest, I think it's time to get like execute and to activate and to give the crowd the win and the logo and the canvas. I feel like this is time for Becky to just get all these big wins heading towards WrestleMania. And I thought this was like a good set of little promos here. I thought it was really good logic from Rhea for her to say, the only reason why you're so active heading into WrestleMania is because you want an excuse for afterwards about why you lost. It was like a great line that I think psychologically plays into the self-doubt of a Becky Lynch.
Rhea's like, since I beat Nia at the pay-per-view, I'm doing nothing. I showed up last week and I smiled at you. I'm doing the least possible before this match. So there will be no excuses.
They're also doing a good job of keeping Liv and Nia within sort of the realm of this entire feud.
Pearson Aldis make the announcement, a 6-pack ladder match for the Undisputed Tag Titles at WrestleMania with qualifying matches over the next few weeks. 3 teams from Raw and 2 from SmackDown, which Aldis noted Pierce is a tough negotiator. And so that will be how we get a bunch of teams onto WrestleMania with ladders.
I like the idea a lot. I mean, you know, one of the questions I think we had for last month's Ask Away or at some point was, do we think a Money in the Bank match could ever make its place back in? I mean, Money in the Bank is big enough that they can craft a whole pay-per-view around it now, but it doesn't mean you can't have a ladder match, you know, and a multi-person ladder match. And what's better than a 6 people in a ladder match? 12 people in a ladder match, okay?
If R-Truth is in this match and they don't do a spot where he climbs a ladder and somehow gets Priest's briefcase at the ringside, I mean, that's that just writes itself.
There are a lot of possibilities. But I mean, look, just judging by the talent that they have available in this tech team division, I mean, you can already tell the match is probably going to be very good, very memorable. I think like WrestleMania really is elevated with like a sort of weapons type of spot fest, you know, in the way TLC used to maybe provide that sort of spike for the show. So I'm really looking forward to it. More so definitely than an otherwise, I don't know, just typical multi-person tag team match.
They noted John Cena at the Oscars, which Michael Cole says he pulled it off.
Yes, he did. Yes.
Hilarious. Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell against Maxine Dupri. So this was a very interesting match. We have Maxine get tagged in and she goes for the reverse caterpillar and gets stopped by Candice LeRae, who is just a horrible person all of a sudden. Like one day she woke up and said, F this. And
there was some justification for it. Last week we had that scene backstage where, I mean, she's kind of grown frustratingly or frustrated about her role in the company, about constantly losing, and she's had enough.
Just now, this is all clicked. But you know, this isn't going so well. I was on such a great role. Never.
WrestleMania season brings out the worst in people.
Well, she just browbeats Maxine in the corner and says she looks stupid and says, you know why people are booing you, right? Because you don't belong here. You think the internet hates you? You should hear what the locker room says about you. And then you think that this is going to be the extent of it. We're going to incorporate the recent controversy involving Maxine. But then she adds, it's a good thing your dead brother isn't here to see what an embarrassment you've become. And Maxine freaks out and goes to leave and goes right into a super kick from Indy, who doesn't realize what has happened here involving her partner, and pins Maxine in 2 minutes and 2 seconds. So you have Indy confused and Candace smiling that they're back on the winning track.
Indy claiming innocence, at least. You know, she didn't necessarily want to be a part of this verbal sort of like bullying. And but she was going to reap the rewards, I guess, you know, or conflicted about reaping the rewards. I actually really like this. I don't know how you feel about it. And I certainly don't know how most of our audience feels about it. But I felt like it was really clever the way they took a viral reaction to, you know, that clip of a fan berating Maxine, and they've turned it into a storyline to help facilitate Candice LeRae's heel turn. And they did it in a way that didn't necessarily break kayfabe either. I mean, this wasn't Candice just telling Maxine, you know, you botch a lot. It was Candace like berating Maxine for attempting a ridiculous move in the reverse caterpillar, which I think, you know, it's silly, no matter how you feel about, you know, the reality of this professional wrestling thing. Right. And this elevated Candace to like almost like a Christian Cage level of heel here, insulting her dead brother. Now, is her deceased brother? She can't be talking about Max, right?
I'm sure that's not the story.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's not either. Her brother?
Max Dupree.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, yes. I guess I just wasn't sure. Was she talking about like a kayfabe story or probably real for this to really kind of hit, I suppose?
Yeah, I mean, it's a story for Maxine, who was like, you had this online issue that was the most attention that Maxine Dupree has acquired. And it can be, I'm sure their read is, hey, here was something that struck a nerve with some people, good or bad. There was a debate about it, and let's incorporate it because people know this is real. And we're playing off of that within storyline context, and then going this further to really just introduce this, like the deceased brother to the aspect of it that is probably going to result in a more like a serious sit down with Maxine, who has to talk about this and make her relatable to people, because they haven't done much character work with her beyond just like the Alpha Academy as the sidekick,
which is why I really enjoyed this particular match, or I mean it's angle, you know, is what we can call it. I mean, because in one match they managed to provide character development for three people, in Maxine, in Candice LeRae, and in Indy Hartwell, who now kind of has to contend with her own morality about whether or not she should be joining with Candice in making fun of people's, you know, deceased family members, or she should continue to, I don't know, lose and be innocent.
Judgment Day complained to Balor and Priest, they come in and complain to Pierce and Aldis about the six-pack ladder match. And Balor doesn't like ladders, we have learned. And they have a chance to cement their legacy, the authority figures state. But Priest says, we're already the best. What do we have to prove? And these are the guys actively trying to get unbooked from WrestleMania. So that's a bit of a change.
I mean, they're already champions. I guess they expect to have an easy match.
Well, R-Truth gets brought up. And they mention Miz and R-Truth aren't here tonight. They're doing media. They got booked on Monday night to go do media to promote the show you're not watching. And then Truth pops in and got confused with the dates of some sort. And
he thought He thought yesterday was Monday or tomorrow's Monday. I don't know. I don't, one of those.
And he thought tonight was not Raw.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. Priest is going to take on R-Truth later. Michael Cole brings out Cody Rhodes for a sit-down interview, and he says the reason he slapped Cody, it was a receipt. Cole goes over his history with Rollins and the fact that Rollins wants to be the top dog, and he's the last one to beat Reigns in a one-on-one match, albeit by DQ, Cole does note, and maybe he wants to be the one to end Roman's streak. How can you trust him? Cody says, you know, people change. You used to be an awful heel. He was actually a great heel, just terrible for your play-by-play man to be. I smashed a throne, and now the guy whose throne it was is one of my closest allies and also gets along with Jey Uso now. So people change. He's giving Seth the benefit of the doubt. Then they are a clip from-
I found that to be a really interesting point that like they decided to introduce, because nowhere in this storytelling has there been any sort of tease of like a tension or division between Cody and Seth? Yes, from their prior history, but not at all since like they've teamed up to face the Bloodline. So for Cole to just kind of bring up the idea that Seth might only want any of this so that he could be the first person to pin Roman is very interesting. And I wonder if it'll play any sort of part in the actual tag team match. Now, I don't think for a second that like Rollins will be turning heel the night before he's supposed to face Drew McIntyre. But could there reveal, could there be some sort of like miscommunication that leads to perhaps the Bloodline winning the match out of like Rollins' jealousy of Cody? Could they tease that? I mean, after Cole introducing it here, I think it might be at least possible.
Then they showed a clip from last October with Cole asking him about finishing his story. And Cody responds now, all these months later, and goes on this whole speech about how he is afraid of not finishing the story and mentions the criticisms of old head podcasters that talk about him being in a suit and using big words. And he says, I can't come out and lose and promise to win it next year. I've already said that after last year. And he said, the story is bigger than me. He mentions fans, his sister, his mother, who he can't hand the title to Dusty, but he can hand the belt to her, and his wife, Brandy. The story is beyond me, but it's up to me. And says that, Roman, we are not in the third inning. We're in the last inning. And at WrestleMania, Michael Cole, you can say that I finished the story. Tremendous promo from Cody here at the end.
I thought this was one of Cody's best. I mean, at least that, as far as I can remember, certainly one of the most emotional I personally heard. He, I think a very important promo for Cody, because he took the opportunity to basically redefine what the story means. It's no longer just about him beating Roman. The story now is essentially like code word for his Yes Movement, you know, his Summer of Punk. It's not just his way of like beating a person in one particular spot. It's the audience changing the main event and having him face Roman instead of The Rock versus Roman Reigns. You know, it's everything to do with Cody Rhodes main eventing WrestleMania for 2 years in a row. And I thought the specific examples that he brought up of the individual fans in the Hannah and Harley made that point feel real, made that point feel that much more emotional. And when he mentioned his mother, like, I've been certainly critical of Cody, like maybe overusing the voice crack, whether or not intentional. I mean, I get the sense he's a very sensitive man, and these voice cracks might just happen as he talks about these things anyway. But I think he's controlled it enough and hasn't brought it out in recent months to the point now where it feels that much more impactful when it does. And that moment where, I mean, presumably he'll win and he'll physically hand the championship to his mother is going to be a wonderful close to WrestleMania. So great promo here. I got emotional just, you know, hearing this person speak. One of his best, I felt.
Really, really solid segment with Cody on the show. Then it was videos on Ricochet and JD McDonagh. I don't know how many were banking on these two to run the gauntlet. Liv and Becky meet in the back. They shake hands. They show mutual respect. And then Nia jumps both of them and puts Becky through a table with her own manhandle slam. And that's going to set up the match for next Monday. And the idea that Becky is continuing to be broken down. And here she goes through a table and she's going into another big match next Monday.
And presumably sets up like Liv versus Nia for somewhere.
I could see them between the two nights that could they have a singles match? Maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, some attachment between the two of them would seem, and that could be a good win for Liv.
And so Liv continues to be a babyface, even though she was kind of flirting with like more of a heel demeanor. But I hope she at least like this has been really good for her to develop, first of all, a character, but secondly, like a bit of an edge to her. Man, they were trying to force that so hard on us like years ago, or at least like 2 years ago, when they were trying to sell us on extreme hardcore icon like Liv Morgan. Remember that? Remember that run?
Maybe they're going to take a page from the Maxine Candace playbook and try and lean into like real issues. And right before WrestleMania, Niall just say, you know, Liv, I just have one question. Do you still have that vape pen I left in your car?
Ooh, ouch. That's like, that would be WrestleMania worthy. I mean, story.
This is WrestleMania season. You go for the jugular with your promos. The Kabuki Warriors against Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark for the women's tag titles. Baszler and Stark, they did a promo earlier in the day. Zayn hit a double stomp onto Zoe Stark and got a two count from that. Asuka receives the tag and then hits the German on Stark. Insane elbow gets avoided, tags in Baszler, and then a Z360 is delivered to Zayn, and then a knee strike by Baszler. Asuka makes the save. Stark then wipes out on a Pescado attempt, and the Kira Fuda is applied onto Kairi Sane, but she rolls out. It's still applied, so Dakota Kai grabs Baszler by the foot, and Baszler lets go, focuses on Kai, and Sane capitalizes with a strike, leading to the insane elbow. Baszler takes the fall in 10 minutes and 21 seconds as the Kabuki Warriors retain.
Good match, I thought. Didn't get a ton of crowd reaction, which I think more so tells you just how little fanfare they built in a title challenge like this. But I thought the action was quite good.
Judgment Day is in the locker room, and Andrade comes in, and Dom is not here tonight. I guess he's on his honeymoon, but they can't really say that, can they? So Dom's just not here tonight.
Why not? They've shown Rhea Ripley with another man, so why could they not acknowledge that Dom is with another woman?
I don't know. That's certain things they just can't let out of the bag, I guess, with Dom. So basically, they asked Andrade that when Dom does come back, maybe we can speak about some business. And he agrees. He's all about business. And Balor says, you know, I've known him a long time. He brings a lot to the table. Damien doesn't care. He's focused on R-Truth. So some involvement there with we haven't really revisited the whole Drew McIntyre alliance with the Judgment Day, which is kind of that outstanding thread, which maybe just gets forgotten, or they can remind us later when they need to.
I can't imagine they would have planned that much for Drew, like ahead of not knowing whether or not he was going to resign.
Yeah, I mean, it's always you always have the potential of whenever you're going to do this with Damian Priest with the cash in, and is he ever going to leave the group, or and if there's a need. But man, Drew really doesn't need it at this point, and he's got his group now. They're up at TKOgroup.com if you want to go look. That's his group. Yeah. Nakamura video followed by Bronson Reed. He just calls them all losers, and they don't know what real hard work is. They're entitled and embarrassing. Damian Priest against R-Truth. We were back to R-Truth being red hot in this match with this crowd. The razor's edge onto the desk gets stopped, so Priest gets run into the post, and then Truth does the five-knuckle shuffle, hits the AA, and Priest kicks out, and man, was this crowd on fire here just to believe that Truth was going to win. And then he applies the STF when Balor and JD run down and they attack DIY on the floor, and Truth comes off the top, leaps onto everyone. Truth returns to the ring into a clothesline and South of Heaven as Damian Priest pins R-Truth. And then it's the Judgment Day attacking Ciampa and Gargano, and Priest chokeslams Ciampa onto the edge and ends with a coup de grace on Johnny Gargano.
Got a great reaction from this crowd. Despite like being pretty deep into the show, this match, yeah, it's amazing. Everybody still loves R-Truth, and I don't know. Something about this is really, really working.
There will be a big announcement from Logan Paul on Tuesday on his podcast at 11 a.m. Eastern time.
Yeah. So this is where they showed stills of who was in attendance at UFC 299, including Rhea Ripley, with, as pictured here, Buddy Murphy, who was not identified, but at least...
Now maybe they're just friends hanging out, old work colleagues.
At least McAfee was asked, like, was almost kind of teasing, saying, who's that she's with? I guess I mean, this is not that much of a news story, other than the fact that, like, I always felt this might have been frowned upon of, like, you know, the company not showing employees of the rival company. I mean, through, I think, what we know of... what was that guy, the Highlander?
Robbie McAllister?
Yes. Or even like their apology to Britt Baker after showing her at one of the NXT events with Adam Cole. And also what we know now of like Luger and DDP at the Sting show not being requested not to be shown. So I found that this kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting with the Luger Page deal at the pay-per-view. And then here we have Buddy Murphy just... front and center here in this in this photo, but yeah, there you have it. Then we go to Jey Uso, who comes out. He said he wanted a fresh start on Raw, but the Bloodline won't let him, and says that he's got one decision to make. It's brother versus brother, and asks Jimmy to face him at WrestleMania because he's going to knock the yeet out of his ass. I don't even want to know what that means.
Is that where yeet comes from?
Yeet. It interesting. Starts there and can be removed through physical violence.
I think they've done a great job of using this yeet thing to give Jey, like, he uses it now as, I mean, his call and response promo style. I mean, the way that, like, Austin at one point might have used what to his advantage. So get ready for 23 years of yeet, everybody. But they, you know, at least for now, we get to enjoy like what feels like a very unique crowd sort of participatory promo style that feels very comfortable for Jey Uso.
If this guy eradicates the what chant, I will vote for him every single year in the Observer Hall of Fame.
I don't think you're not alone. I don't think he's eradicating it. I think you're just getting another what chant.
Well,
it's a two-headed beast now.
I will take a new word over it, even if the repetition pattern doesn't subside.
You might start getting both.
Yeet. What? And yeet?
What? Yeet. What?
Yeah, this is why I'm going to start watching.
Of both ends.
Headphones on. They showed a video of Gunther, his title reign since June of 2022. And then he's with Jackie Redmond, and he has elevated this belt to new heights. The Chem de la Chem is going to step into the ring tonight. And he is flattered by this. And it's an affirmation of the work that he has put in. And it takes a lot to be in his position. And he gives the most empty good luck to his challengers as he smiles into the camera.
So great, this guy.
And there's not a Chem de la Chem t-shirt coming Mania weekend. They're dropping the ball big time.
How about a Creme de la Creme Gunther coffee?
Ooh. Could be.
How many, what do you take in your coffee?
Chem de la Chem de la Chem.
Yes. Yeah. They've done a great job making this dude feel like, you know, the guy everybody wants to take to prom. Like he feels very special. And look, the man looks so good in a suit.
He
wouldn't you want to go to prom with him?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the man look at him, clean shaven, very nice tie.
Yeah.
Man cleans up very well. Next week in Raleigh, we've got qualifying matches for the ladder match. New Day against Tozawa and Otis. DIY against the Creeds, who have just disappeared into the ether, that is main event. And Indus Sheer against Miz and R-Truth. Yeah. I can't say I am a... Maybe you can argue the DIY Creeds match, but I think it looks very straightforward of who's going to be in this match.
As it should be, really. You know, you have the people that you want to see at Mania and the people that you just don't really care that much about.
And then it's time for the gauntlet match. So this is like the last 45 minutes of Raw, starting off with Ricochet against JD McDonagh. Ricochet was just fantastic in this. They went 12 minutes and this guy was just incredible. He comes and hits his ribs after a quebrada and lands on the knees. So he would be selling his ribs for the rest of this. Comes back with a poison Rana and then takes delivers a DVD to McDonagh on the edge, beats the count into the ring. And as JD slides in to beat the count, he's hit with a quebrada and a brain buster by Ricochet. Another two count. He is throwing throwing Ricochet ribs first into the post, and then they're fighting on top. JD gets sent off, and Ricochet hits the most impressive shooting star press, where he rotates and then did this like extra like oomph as he was like elevating, like just phenomenal looking shooting star, and pins him in 12 minutes and 2 seconds. I will say they had a lot working against them. Number one, no one was banking on these two to be like running the table here. Number two, starting the gauntlet match at the end of Raw, as opposed to the beginning of Raw, like, you know, we're getting 45 minutes here, and it's with two guys. They did have to, like, Ricochet's stuff was spectacular, and they did get the crowd kind of reacting, but they were starting at a deficit at the beginning here with several factors.
Very much so. Yeah. But I mean, I think if you're going to bank on like this relatively cold spot going to anybody, it would be somebody like Ricochet, who could just like dazzle any crowd just based off of his in-ring work. And he completely did here. He looked amazing. This ended up being a really strong showcase for him. And they did a good job building up that rib injury to give him an out for the next match.
Yeah, because Bronson Reed is in next, and they only go a minute 44, but they did quite a bit. I literally had to double check. I was like, there was no way this was a minute 44, because I thought it was 5 minutes. There is a suicide dive by Ricochet, and then a Fosbury flop onto the other side by Ricochet. He's still selling the ribs, but then gets caught and run into the buckle, followed with a power slam, senton, and tsunami. So Ricochet is gone, and Bronson Reed advances to take on Sami Zayn, who comes out furious over his lack of video production, and he hits a moonsault off the barricade. They go through the commercial break, and it's Zayn with the sunset bomb out of the corner, pinning Bronson in 6 minutes and 26 seconds. But Reed continues to beat him down after the match, and thus the weakening of Sami Zayn, who was having to go through two more opponents in this gauntlet after the attack by Bronson.
Tsunami.
Yes, hit with the tsunami, and Zayn would be just very wounded here, especially once he ran into Chad Gable. But first, it's Shinsuke Nakamura, and for whatever reason, we're in the match with Nakamura, and we get a telestrator breakdown of Bronson Reed's tsunami, just to remind everyone the devastating impact of this.
Just to give McAfee a role,
I guess. We got to get our money out of that telestrator that we've for all the new production elements that I'm assuming have been Lee fitting choices. I don't know if the telestrator has really made that.
I'm assuming they really like it. Otherwise they wouldn't give Pat this time so much.
Well, after a blue thunderbomb for a two count, the Kinshasa gets stopped. There's a kick to the back of Zane's head, and then Nakamura misses the buckle and is there to eat the Huluva kick in 6.5 minutes, bringing things down to Sami Zayn and Chad Gable. I would say most people's favorites, one or the other, to win this. And they had a great final match. Gable comes down, and he doesn't want to win dishonorably. He waits for Zayn to get up and points to the sign to remind them what they are fighting for. And Zayn remembers. And Gable gets into his full Kurt Angle mode with rolling Germans, goes to the ankle lock, and then is kicked off. They go through the break. After a moonsault lands on the knees, they trade slaps. Gable goes back to the ankle lock, and Zayn fights his way to the rope. Chaos Theory gets blocked, and then Zayn hits an exploder, but he's limping from the damage done to the ankle, and he tries for the Huluva kick, but he's limping and can't do it. So Gable goes back to the ankle lock, pulling him to the center. And Zayn is trying to kick him off, but Gable won't let go before lifting him up for a German, and climbs up one more time for a moonsault, missing it. And Zayn struggles, but manages the Huluva kick. He's crawling over, trying to pin Gable, who puts him into a backslide, kicks out, and then crossfaces from Gable. The straps come down, deadlift German that Cole calls a Chaos Theory, and goes back to the ankle lock, which Zayn uses a roll-up counter to catch Gable in 12 minutes and 31 seconds, and Sami Zayn will challenge Gunther at WrestleMania. And then the two, they hugged afterwards, and Gunther walks out to see for himself the Chem de la Chem, Sami Zayn.
That's right. I thought this match was really great. You know, the WWE really knows how to book these gauntlet matches, and they know how to make their baby faces using these gauntlet matches. They did a great job with Ricochet in the first, two portions of it. But then to like do Gable versus Sammy in the end was somewhat unexpected, because they could have easily put Gable into that Ricochet spot early in the match, give him his story, get him out of there so that you could just, you know, pave the way for the crowd to fully concentrate on Sami Zayn. Here they gave you two baby faces in the final, the two guys with the biggest story. And I mean, arguably they did it because it provided the most dramatic end possible, because maybe these two were the only ones that were the options. And it worked out perfectly fine to their advantage. I thought it was an outstanding performance from Chad Gable. From the moment he walked out, you got the sense that this was a guy who believed that, you know, he was actually having the biggest match of his life, that he was trying to actually do this so that he can, I don't know, avenge that disappointment from his daughter. He was great. Even in the loss, I thought he sold the heartbreak of really well. And I mean, I don't necessarily believe Sammy is going to beat Gunther at WrestleMania. So I hope that there's still a Chad Gable versus Gunther match out there for him after WrestleMania.
On Father's Day.
Great idea. Great idea. Yeah, and Sammy did a great job selling that ankle. A hobbling Helluva kick, seemingly just as effective as a regular Helluva kick, but a really great match, really great stories being told.
Yeah, he's going to have a Helluva sprained ankle after.
Yes.
That's all I've got, guys. This is me at 40, okay? So I was entertained by the match overall. In particular, I thought it was bookended by the strongest matches of the gauntlet, and they gave the most time to the Ricochet match to open with JD, and then the Gable Zane got a really compelling end to it as well. So there you have it. That was Raw as WrestleMania continues to take shape, and we're starting to plug in the holes now that we are 3.5, well, almost 4 weeks away from the two-night show in Philadelphia. So
yeah,
good a lot of the show, I thought.
I thought so too. Yeah, a lot of great work put into this IC title match. Suddenly now, Sammy versus Gunther feels like a pretty, you know, big match for a WrestleMania mid-card. I think they put good work into Drew versus Seth here. Good work into
Becky and Rhea
and Becky, and great work into Cody Rhodes, who I thought cut a hell of a promo tonight.
All right. We will go to any super chats if you have them, and we have a few pieces of feedback before we wish everyone farewell for another night.
Let's go to some super chats here. We go to Killa Kurt, who sends $10. Thank you, Killa Kurt. He says, sending this before I go to bed for work in the AM, but how would you debut Mercedes on Wednesday? Do you go full punk and have her open the show, or go Okada style and have her come out in a segment?
Do you think that they intensify the... Do they make it more obvious before Wednesday? And do you think it is at a level where it is obvious that she's coming? Like, certainly, like, you have the graphical elements. They're certainly not keeping this under lock and key, but do you see them amplifying over the next 48 hours?
I don't, John, because I think the opportunity to do that would have been on Wednesday or even Saturday, when you have a bigger audience. At this point, you're only doing it for an audience that already knows that she's going to be there. I feel like it's obvious. It's as obvious as the CM Punk arrival was. The only sort of determinant of whether or not it'll be successful is whether or not people care as much about a Mercedes Moné appearing on AEW versus a CM Punk. So I think it's obvious enough. And if they wanted to maybe make it more obvious for a bigger audience, they kind of already missed their chance. But we kind of talked about where I thought they might debut her. Where do you think they'll debut her on Wednesday?
I think I'd probably close the show with it. Leave it like the big thing to go off the show with that is the lasting image. And also it's like she's here, and yeah, maybe you give her like some promo time, but maybe it's just like she goes out at the end and then she can address the audience in Boston, but you got to tune in to hear her, for lack of a better term, mission statement.
So I think that's also really interesting to discuss, because with CM Punk, with the first dance, you know, you're not only getting a CM Punk appearance, but you're going to get a CM Punk promo, which is sometimes even more valuable than a CM Punk match. With Mercedes, we can probably safely assume she's not going to be wrestling on the show. We also don't know if like she has a CM Punk level promo within her. Nonetheless, I think she has to deliver something substantial, and therefore I think she has to cut a promo. I don't know if like simply coming out and walking will be enough, but maybe it will, you know, maybe it will for some people. I expect a bit of a promo though, or at least like a showdown, like a satisfying showdown with a big,
well, one. I would certainly do that. Like tease like where the direction is going, and you want to certainly give people more rather than less for a show that you're building up and leave people satisfied as well. So maybe you go out and do something more. I mean, it really, they could start the show, they could end the show. It's like it's how they have the show mapped out. There may be a strategic reason to go with one over the other.
Let's go to Jason Hagholm, who sends $10 as well. Thank you, Jason. He says, I just want to say that, John, you and Brandon have done vital and important journalism on this Vince McMahon case. You guys have not let the story die. Keep doing your excellent work.
Thanks very much, Jason. I appreciate the compliment a lot.
Thank you, Jason. A lot of us echo those sentiments. Lastly, let's go to Matthew Yanes, who sends $2, who says, happy belated Senor Pollock. Be well.
I thought that said Senior Pollock. I'll take Senor first. Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com. We're going to start off. Let's go to Muggin. Raw flew by and the gauntlet match was full of drama. As much as I wanted Gable to run through it, Sami Zayn facing Gunther for the IC title is the next best thing. It was also neat the commentary brought up Ramadan. I can relate to what Sami goes through. I missed that
we didn't even mention that. Yeah. So it's, I believe, the first day of Ramadan, and Sami, I guess, did not eat between sunrise and sunset.
Yeah. I mean, this is common with like several fighters that will not fight during Ramadan. That, I mean, it is, you know, something that they haven't mentioned before in relation to Sami Zayn specifically. Mm-hmm. The video packages put over that title's prestige, and the women's matches went 2 out of 3. The Candice LeRae turn felt forced by going after Maxine's late brother. Becky and Liv was certainly above average. I'm glad something's being done to separate the tag titles by putting them in a 6-pack ladder match, which sounds bonkers on paper. The Cody sit down was poignant, and I'm glad it tied back to that moment from 5 months ago.
I didn't really have that much issue with the Candace going after her late brother. For one thing, I think any sort of reaction is a good reaction if you're a member of the women's mid-card tag team division at this point. You know, so we're really kind of battling from like a pretty low bar, and any sort of identifiable trait is a good one. The shock value of it, I mean, it's worked so well for Christian, so who's to say it can't for Candace?
I guess it's just the history of invoking things like that doesn't have like the greatest of track records that they lean into much more exploitive nature, especially in this company, that I totally understand why people would have that sort of roll your eyes at what they're going for as almost kind of the, like, hey, we need some idea to humanize Maxine.
Why do you think it's worked for Christian?
For Christian, I mean, he's a great performer. I would also state that it's not, to me, it's also not like the one and only characteristic. Like, yeah, he was, for a while, it was just the shock of what he was going to say. It's like, that's not the bread and butter of the character. He's a great heel if he never brings up those lines again, but it did work. And
have the baby faces always given him his comeuppance?
There's that degree to it. And you also don't have,
I'm not saying the answer is yes. I mean,
no, and it, like, believe me, when he first did it with Jack Perry, it's not like it was some unanimous vote of approval either. Like it was to some people, the probably the same, like some just are going to look at that as, you know, kind of taking something that doesn't need to be introduced just for the effect of getting a character over. But I think if you can do it in such a way, you've got buy-in from the participants, and you can do it in a way that enhances a story. You've got the approval of the people you need, then there's no reason that you can't go into territory like that if it's to elicit an emotional response and be doing it as, you know, for that purpose, that your audience doesn't feel as though you're being exploitive. And
right,
WWE, that they frankly have a longer history where you can look at different stories as exploitive.
Mm. We'll see how they handle it. We'll see like what sort of, like, I don't know, presentation of this story they'll give Maxine Dupree. Let's go lastly here to Annie, who says the 90-minute cut of Raw extended quite a bit this week, as I thought this was an awesome show. Cody's transition from the guy who just wanted to win a championship to the last hope to save the roster from a machine is an awesome arc. Throw in Seth Rollins, a potential mentor figure to Cody because of his numerous wins versus Reigns, and Cody's story is straight out of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. His promo had me ready to run through a brick wall. Even Rollins' arc, being selfless, has been dovetailed into his feud with Drew. Ever since the pivot, all of these stories have been intertwined quite well. Awesome storytelling.
It was a really good promo, but don't run through a brick wall for anyone. It's not worth it. But thank you for the feedback there. All right. That's going to wrap up the show. And Tuesday night, you can tune in for Up Next with Braden Harrington and Davey Portman. And then Wednesday, Wayne and I will be back with Rewind to Dynamite. And again, Tim Marchman will join Brandon Thurston and I Wednesday, 3 Eastern, here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. So if you are so inclined, hit the subscribe button. And you know what? Splurge. Give us a thumbs up on top of it. And then you can make your way over to postwrestlingcafe.com. 3 bonus shows coming out this week with Ask Away, the Mailbag Show on Thursday. Friday, we've got Rewind to SmackDown. And then Saturday, Collision Course with Kate from Montreal and John Cena. Plus Sunday night, it's that time of the month for the NWA podcast. Two-Way Ray has brought the powers that be all together on one stream with Chris from LA, Andrew Thompson, and Nate Milton. And the four of them will be catching up on what is always a busy month of professional wrestling and always say a must listen.
Always. No matter how long it takes you, I always, always get through them. Yes.
All right. So that's it for us. Thanks to everyone for tuning in. And that is going to wrap up Rewind to Raw presented by NordVPN.com/postwrestling.